From KALW in San Francisco, I'm Hannah Baba, and this is the documentary We're All Giants, the story of the 2010 San Francisco Giants baseball season. This was the year everything changed.
Way back, Hamilton's back, at the warning track, at the wall, and...
We look back at the San Francisco Giants' World Series win.
Everything went right. It had to happen. It was just destined to happen.
Riveted to this story because it was just so cool.
We were rooting for the Giants at that time. We all kind of felt like family.
The Giants and baseball sort of transcended their standing as a game that has a season and to becoming a great moment in the history of the community.
Stay tuned for the best season ever. Sports aren't for everyone, and baseball in particular can be a hard sell. The baseball season has 162 games, and these games feel like they last forever. The players always seem to do a lot of standing around and spitting, never much actual playing. So why is it the national pastime? Any fan might tell you it's about the skill of the game, strategy combined with athleticism. But it's more than that.
My dad was a baseball fan, a sports fan, and he, in those days, the games were on the radio, and he always had a ball game on the radio.
I play sports since the third grade. I used to go to baseball games with my father.
Baseball is something that families and friends can share with one another, regardless of whatever else may be going on in their lives. It's something that parents enjoy with their kids, passing down their love and loyalty for a team to the next generation.
From when I first went to one of their games, and it was really fun there. I got a ball, and Tim Lincecum signed it. And since then, I've really become a Giants fan.
But the Giants' magical World Series win in 2010 wasn't just a victory for lifelong fans or even sports fans. It was special for everyone. The World Series run was a great story. It gave everyone in the Bay Area a reason to high-five strangers in the street, even if they'd never watched a baseball game before.
Let's go, Giants!
This is a story about what it means for everyone. For the homegrown fans who've worn orange and black since before they could walk.
In 1962 is when I saw my first game.
I mean, I've been around here since 66, and I've followed them extremely closely, so I do go back quite a few years.
I mean, I haven't been a Giants fan for 54 years like some people. Only, 23 years. That's practically nothing.
For the transplants who swore off their old home teams when they moved to the Bay. For the bandwagoners who couldn't help but get swept up in Giants mania.
It was fun. They won and everyone else was excited, so why shouldn't I?
I saw the hair attached to the Lincecum wigs and the panda hats. It was all of those different items that made me sort of fall in love with the Giants.
I'm really not a Giants fan, but this year you couldn't help but be a Giants fan.
We're going to have some help to tell this tale.
My name is Bruce Jenkins. I'm a sports columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle.
My name is Joe Burke, morning announcer here on KALW.
My name is Da Vinci, and I'm from here, my home, San Francisco Bay Area, and I've been rapping for about 6 years. Feel me?
Name is Grant Brisby, and I write for McCovey Chronicles.
My name is Alan Farley, producer and announcer at KALW Radio.
My name is Ashkan Davaron, and I'm an entertainer.
My name is John Miller. I broadcast Giants baseball on radio and television.
And we've got some help from you, the fans. The people who came together, whether they cared about baseball or not. This is the story of the underdog team that was always pushing the envelope when it came to fashion, nicknames, and hairstyles on their faces. It's the story of a ragtag group of veterans, rookies, and relative nobodies who rose to the occasion to bring home their first World Series trophy. This is the story of the San Francisco Giants.
Put your hands in the air.
So who are the San Francisco Giants? Let's go ahead and meet them as they take the field for Game 5 of the World Series. Manager Bruce Bochy has made a makeshift lineup in practically every playoff game, and Game 5 is no exception.
This is the lineup for the epic Game 5.
Along with the music they walk up to the plate with, here are your San Francisco Giants.
Andres Torres, leading off in right field.
A 31-year-old rookie who languished 10 years in the minor leagues, but he is fast.
Andres Torres is basically a track runner. When you watch him run with the pumping of the arms, he looks exactly like an Olympic sprinter. Great athlete, incredibly humble, very, very grateful to have had sort of a rebirth in the game. He's extremely grateful to be where he is, and he's made the most of it. A real burst of energy from that guy on the field and off.
Batting second,
Freddie Sanchez, second base.
An oft-injured former batting champ who never played for a winning team.
Freddie Sanchez grew up as a Dodger fan. A real intense Dodger fan. And when he came to the Giants, it was against his will. He was traded. It wasn't a free agent choice that he made. It freaked him out. It really did. He had a really hard time believing that he was wearing the other team's uniform, the Giants' uniform, the dreaded Giants, the hated Giants. And he gradually got over that. And by the end of the season, he was as valuable a hitter as they had on the team.
Buster Posey. We didn't know it then, but he was the rookie of the year. I think we all felt like we knew it. He was the catcher hitting third.
For this kid to arrive in such a fashion so early in his career and basically take over, he took over the team in the sense that if you'd ask guys, who's the one guy you'd want up there in the top of the ninth on the road and you're down two with two guys on? Most of them, if not all, would have said Posey. They would have thought about it, and then they would have gone,
Buster Posey. Just because you can really kind of separate the season into before Buster Posey was a starting catcher and after. And after Buster Posey was a starting catcher, the Giants were amazing.
And then he goes behind the plate and catches this pitching staff. You know, it's a complex, you know, assignment. So he's in charge of that. And then he comes up with his cannon throwing arm where he shuts down the other team's running game. It was dreamlike. And, you know, he's a very humble guy, so he's basically not real, I would say. That's not a real person.
Batting fourth,
Cody Ross in left field, hitting cleanup. The man who began the postseason hitting seventh, eighth in the order, hitting cleanup for the first time as a Giant.
Quite a turnaround. Ross was waived, basically fired, mid-season by the Florida Marlins.
Yeah, Cody Ross was crushed to be leaving Florida because it was a team that, not necessarily that he embraced as the team he wanted to play for the rest of his life, but just that the team had given up on him. And he went right into the front offices and confronted a couple, I don't know if it was a general manager or somebody, said, basically, you have made a huge mistake here. And he actually started crying, not like sobbing, but, you know, tears were coming out of his eyes. You've made a huge mistake here. And they did. They did make a huge mistake. He's a guy who, he's completely fearless. He wanted to be a rodeo clown or be in the rodeo. And he really did. And, you know, he just wanted to get out there and have a horse buck him four rows, you know, deep into the seats.
Juan Uribe, third base, hitting fifth.
Juan Uribe was absolutely invaluable. He's a real cheerful guy. Absolutely. He's so in love with the game. He loves everything about it. He loves getting there early and, you know, hanging out with the guys, telling jokes. He was a big, really one of the kingpins of the Hispanic group, which is huge. They had like 10 or 20 or 12 Hispanic guys on the team and played wherever, whenever, at whatever moment.
Aubrey Huff at first base hitting sixth.
The team's leading power hitter and wearer of the red rally thong. No kidding.
He's still a real salty guy. I mean, he's the guy with the thong. You know, he'll light up a cigarette every now and then. And grew up in a trailer in Texas, for heaven's sake, you know. But, man, is he a good hitter. He has just got a sweetest left-handed swing. And just, you always need sort of the old hand there to kind of keep guys in line, and Huff proved to be that guy.
Pat Burrell, the designated hitter, batting seventh.
Another midseason pickup who was sitting on his couch when the Giants called, Pat Burrell, Pat the Bat.
Now, Pat Burrell really had a rebirth here. He's a local guy, obviously, a high school hero, and went to the Phillies, you know, which is can be a real nasty town if you're a streak hitter who strikes out a lot. And he struck out a ton when he first got there, and they just about booed him out of town. And, well, he went to Tampa Bay and didn't have a good experience there. He's a little quiet, but he proved to be a real leader on the team. You know, he was playing in his hometown. They were winning. He was doing great things, and that sense of belonging really got a hold on his soul and his personality, and brought out the best in him. Again, another unlikely story that proved to be invaluable.
Edgar Renteria at shortstop, batting eighth.
Ah, the oft-injured Renteria.
Edgar Renteria, yeah, he was just, he talked about retiring, I think in like late August. The feeling was, well, if you leave now, wouldn't it be okay? You know, you might as well. You're hurt. You're not playing much.
It's like his 34-year-old body, or whatever he was. When I say 34, it always seems like he can't be 34. He must be 39 or something. But it looked like his body was 39 or 40 years old. It really, at one point, seemed like if he played 3 or 4 days in a row, he was going to break down. And I think that probably was more often than not the case. So, and Edgar hit 3 home runs the whole season.
But he's got so much pride. He's done so many important things for winning teams. You know, he's a guy that ended a World Series with a single up the middle, for heaven's sake.
That was when he played for the Florida Marlins 13 years earlier in 1997.
Aaron Rowand in center field, batting ninth.
In 2010, he had the worst batting average of his 10-year career, by far.
But he was a guy who, again, another guy who's been on a World Series team. He's done a lot of winning. He loses his job to Torres, and the fans are down on him. They're wondering he shouldn't even be on the postseason roster. But, you know, he kept his head up. He totally got what was going on in that clubhouse, and he sure as heck wasn't going to be the one to bring it down by grousing about his own situation. And it was real genuine. You know, I don't think he was faking it. He really felt like this team was going somewhere. And, you know, maybe I'll sneak in there. And sure enough, who was the center fielder in Game 5? Aaron Rowan.
And the pitcher for the Giants in this big game, the biggest game in San Francisco Giants history, as it turned out, Tim Lincecum, just the man you would want out there for a big game.
And very much the symbolic leader of the pack.
Tim Lincecum. I saw him leaving the clubhouse one day. He's dressed in all black, and he's got this little weird black hat on, and he's walking his boxer dog through the clubhouse. He looked like Patti Smith in 1982. I mean, who is this guy? Who is Tim Lincecum? I mean, he's a little tiny guy who can throw a ball through a wall. I don't even know where to start with Lincecum. He's such a trip. I mean, he's basically a chill kind of stoner guy from Seattle, and he can strike out anybody in the game at will.
Lincecum's baseball credentials are unmatched. After 3 full seasons, he's a 3-time strikeout king and 2-time Cy Young Award winner as the best pitcher in the National League. But his personal history is a little more pedestrian. During the offseason, he picked up his first citation for possession of marijuana, which makes some of his hometown fans love him all the more.
In all the years I've been here, this was the team, more than any, that everyone could relate to, just from a spiritual standpoint.
Altogether, your San Francisco Giants were called
a lot of, like, weird guys and cast-offs, a bit of a motley crew and a bunch of misfits.
Not just by recent Australian immigrant Danny Dunleavy and local fan Dana Cohen, but by their own manager, Bruce Bochy, who also called them, quote, cast-offs and misfits. Somehow, these players, this team, made it to the game's grandest stage, and they brought their city with them.
A different star every night, and people related to that in a really deep and intense manner.
So here we are, November 1st, 2010, Game 5 of the World Series. The Giants lead the Texas Rangers 3-1. They're one win away from bringing their first championship back to San Francisco. Millions of fans are watching, from where the game is taking place in Arlington, Texas, to a house party near San Francisco's Ocean Beach. And we are there.
My name is Leah Anderson.
My name is Isaac Anderson. I'm 7.5.
My name is Jason Anderson.
My name is Omar Anderson. I'm 5.5.
My name is Ben Trefney.
My name is Aaron Trefney, and I'm 8 years old.
My name is Francis Trefney.
My name is Kyle Trefney, and I'm 8.5 years old.
My name is Etta Budd, and I'm 8 years old.
My name is Susan Robinson.
My name is Oliver Budd, and I'm 6 years old.
My name is Matt Alexander.
My name is Nolan Alexander, and I'm 8 years old.
My name is Laura Hodder.
My name is Ben Alexander, and I'm 8 years old.
Across the bay, a crowd has come together at Ben and Nick's bar in Oakland. We're with
Hannibal Diaz. I am a Bay Area native. I've grown up here, been here my whole life.
And thousands gathered before a giant projection screen set up in San Francisco's Civic Center Plaza.
In that final game, the clinching game of the World Series, it was as if Tim Lincecum said, "This is who I am. I was born to do this. I've been looking forward to this night my entire life."
It would be a big challenge. He was facing Texas Rangers star pitcher Cliff Lee.
The world was focusing on Cliff Lee as the guy for the postseason.
This guy, you know, he's a big deal.
The king of the postseason.
Going into the World Series, Cliff Lee had won 7 postseason starts, and he'd never lost. Lee was so good that before the series began, Sports Illustrated breathlessly reported that
"The left-hander is more than the central character of this series. He looms above it like the sun above the earth. There are only the days Lee is scheduled to pitch, and the days spent waiting for him to get the ball again."
Lee was that good. That is, until he got pounded by the Giants in Game 1. But Game 5 would be different.
This game, the clinching game, was an old-timey pitching duel between two great pitchers.
It was pitch for pitch, pitcher for pitcher. I mean, it was a very tight, close game. It was exciting, but it was unpredictable.
The kind of a game that you expect you'll see in the World Series, where you got the best of the best.
We'll pick up the action in the top of the 7th after we take a quick break. You're listening to the original documentary, We're All Giants, from KALW in San Francisco. I'm your host, Hannah Baba. You can hear this documentary in its entirety and find plenty of extra material at our website. It's KALW.org. And now let's return to Game 5 of the 2010 World Series. Here's the Giants Hall of Fame broadcaster, John Miller.
Going into the 7th inning, Cliff Lee back on the hill for the Rangers. Tim Lincecum has thrown 6 shutout innings. Nothing score as Lee goes to work against the Giants here in the 7th.
Cody Ross gets a base hit.
Now the Giants get the leadoff man.
Juan Uribe follows with a single. So, 2 on, no out.
This calls for a bunt. It's a nothing-nothing game.
But a bunt's probably not coming, because the next guy up is Aubrey Huff.
And Aubrey Huff doesn't bunt. He hasn't bunted for a sacrifice in 9 years. And much less, he's the Giants' home run and RBI guy. He's their leading hitter.
But today is different.
He bunts.
He bunted. I couldn't believe it.
It was incredible.
His first bunt.
the last thing you'd ever expect.
Incredible.
Number one, Aubrey Huff had not bunted at any time the whole year.
It's one of the truisms that I've heard, and it happens virtually every game. You can see something you've never seen before. It's so unpredictable.
And I think that rattled Cliff Lee a little bit.
Pat Burrell, one of the Giants' best power threats, comes to the plate. And the mighty Burrell, well, he struck out.
So frustrated when Burrell struck out.
Well, he wasn't the last out, though.
Shortstop Edgar Renteria steps to the plate.
Renteria was swinging a very hot bat in that postseason and had already taken
the range is deep.
Well, when you're watching Renteria from anywhere, in my case from the press box, the last thing you're thinking is that he's going to hit a home run. It's just not part of the deal, you know.
They obviously with Cliff Lee, we're not going to walk him intentionally, but to try to get him to go out of the strike zone and chase a bad ball. And if you end up walking him, hey, you got a base empty. But he threw one to the outside, and it cut in over the plate. He made a mistake, and boom.
I remember when he hit the ball, I remember saying to myself very quietly, because you can't be very loud in the press box, I just said no.
Way back. Hamilton's back, at the warning track, at the wall, and...
Yeah!
Adios, pelota!
Screamed, and they're all like, what's going on? What happened?
It was too good to be true.
And that home run went over the fence, and that's when 53 years of pent-up frustration and being a Giants fan and never winning, it all came through, and I was laughing and crying at the very same time.
It was just one of those surreal moments that you remember your whole life.
And I'll pretty much almost always remember this. I feel like that.
You know, the most memorable home run, the most decisive home run, the biggest home run in the history of the San Francisco Giants, and it came from Edgar Renteria, and the Giants have the three-run lead suddenly. Not a ground ball for a single and a run, but three runs on one swing of the bat.
Why did they show all the Giants fans?
Because they were there so excited.
Yeah! Good. That was a good thing.
Thousands of people are cheering the homer at San Francisco's Civic Center Park.
That was really good. That was really good.
I'm Allison Crow. I live in Oakland, and I just started following the Giants a little bit last season, but this season I got really into it, and I think it was good luck. This is awesome.
Jason Cardona is part of the celebration. He's been a Giants fan.
Since a boy. Little boy, yeah. I grew up in San Jose.
The night the San Francisco Giants could clinch their first World Series championship, neither Crow nor Cardona could imagine being anywhere but right here.
This is exciting. It's really fun that everyone came out.
It brings on camaraderie and, you know, it's good. It's fun. And look at the backdrop. The backdrop is, like, beautiful, isn't it?
It's getting dark now. The city hall is lit up in orange.
All lit up in orange to commemorate the moment with the Giants, the colors. So it's good. It's nice. It's beautiful. It stands out. It's a beacon of light, right? Orange light in the night.
San Francisco Giants, please stand up.
San Francisco rapper Da Vinci is one of many Bay Area artists featured on the song Black and Orange. It's one of many songs inspired by the Giants' World Series run. Da Vinci's love for the team started more than a decade earlier when he went to Candlestick Park as a kid, and the tickets were a little bit cheaper.
The tickets used to be like a dollar, and they used to all take us at the parking rack across the street from my house right on Field Street. And they used to just, you know, in the summertime, that we go on a field trip to the Giants game, only have to pay $1. So ever since then, man, I've been sporting the black and orange SF hat. You know what I'm saying?
Black and orange is the city's hair. You are getting warm, we're about to go on a tear. San Quentin fence to come and bring heat across the plate. Tim Lynch to come.
All right, back to the game. It's the middle of the seventh, and in baseball, that means one thing. Listening to the original documentary We're All Giants from KALW in San Francisco. I'm your host, Hanat Baba. You can hear this documentary in its entirety and find plenty of extra material at our website, kalw.org. And now, after a quick stretch, we'll go back to Game 5 of the 2010 World Series. It's the bottom of the seventh inning. Here's the Giants Hall of Fame broadcaster, John Miller.
Tim Lincecum, back to work now. For the first time, pitching with a lead here in Game 5, 3-0 Giants as the Rangers come to bat. The things I thought about there were simply, there's 9 outs to go, and Lincecum's been great, but this is a very good park in which to hit, and the Rangers have some guys. And if they can get a couple of men on, they got several guys capable of popping one.
Rangers right fielder Nelson Cruz promptly hits one out of the park.
Oh, they got one. They got one. Wow.
Nelson Cruz hit a solo homer.
Only a solo, though.
And that just sort of underscored the fragile nature. Now they just needed one guy on base. And the tying run, the possible tying run, comes to the plate.
You know, a walk, broken bat single, home run, Rangers. You know, just baseball can happen so quickly.
For many Giants fans, a late lead in a World Series game actually brought back bad memories. Just 8 years earlier, in 2002, they led the Anaheim Angels 3-2. One more win and they'd be the champs. They took a 5-0 lead in the seventh inning. And then, well, this is Giants baseball.
I'm Joe Eskenazi. I'm the online news editor at San Francisco Weekly. I've been a Giants fan since 1985.
I think for a long time I really liked that they were a losing team. There's something really, you know, endearing about the underdog.
I've always said it bothers me how much it bothers me regarding the way that I watch the Giants and the way it matters so much. And I'm not a screamer. It just eats you up.
It's kind of stressful and really exciting too, because I know they have such good players, and I'm like, they can do the thing. They can do it.
Because I knew then, barring some completely ridiculous thing like it happened against the Angels in 2002, we were actually going to win it.
You know, it was years that I didn't think about Game 6 every day, just in some fleeting moment, you know, when you're not thinking about anything else.
I didn't want to believe it, but in the back of my head I was, you know, doing cartwheels. But I was doing that in 2002, you know, as well, before the Angels came back, so.
Still didn't think they were going to win it. Just because of the experience is, for 53 years, they find a way to lose, like 2002. And they had a 5-run lead with 7 outs to go. You know, they had a 3-game. It was just
a few outs to go, where you're counting the outs.
And at this point, I'm thinking, you know, what do I do? Do I get champagne now? Do I wait until it's over and then get champagne? Is that anticlimactic? Should the champagne be chilled already? Boy, you know, I'm thinking, how do I celebrate this?
I needed to have a column done at the end of the game, more or less. And so I'm writing away this flowery Giants. They've finally done it. You know, they've got a big lead, and how Barry Bonds and Jeff Kent, and this erases all the heartbreaks of the past. And, you know, I'm writing this column, and as we all were. We were all writing the same kind of thing.
Giants have got this nailed.
And it slowly starts to unravel.
And then it just slipped away, and it was just gut-wrenching.
And you're watching this column just evaporate into space to the point where it was worthless. They had to throw it out and start over.
That was so frustrating.
Just gut-wrenching. The loss.
It's hard to imagine a team getting that close to a championship and not winning it.
Everyone was so sad.
It just doesn't happen that often.
Selena Harrington.
That close.
It was just like, it was the worst day ever. Because it felt like you lost. I mean, you're a fan, yes, but it also feels like you're, you know, part of the team. Even though you're not on the field with them, you still feel like you're a part of the team.
It was shattering. I mean, we felt the shattering experience in the press box that the team was feeling, that the fans were feeling, and it really did seem over, even though there was another game to go.
I couldn't even watch the next game because I just knew the Giants were not going to come back.
They did not come back.
So I think that's when I started thinking about this idea of the disappointment of a Giants fan, because I really was disappointed.
In 2002, after Game 6, I think every true fan knew that that was it, and I called up my best friend, who I had led into Giants fandom in the 80s with just my sheer enthusiasm, and I told him, I'm sorry I got you into this.
Top of the eighth inning. The Giants ahead 3-1 now, and I'm sure Tim Lincecum, as strong as he's been, wouldn't mind if the Giants got another run or two here.
But they didn't. The score remained the same. And for old Giants fans, those memories of failures past just kept on coming. And it wasn't just 2002. There were many, many more. Like Game 7 of the 1962 World Series against the New York Yankees, when Hall of Famer Willie McCovey came up to bat with 2 outs, the Giants down 1-0, and Matty Alou on third base and Willie Mays on second. A hard-hit ball could have won the game, and McCovey hit a ball hard. Except he hit it right at second baseman Bobby Richardson. The Giants lost the World Series, and the beatdowns went on and on.
I watched Sandy Koufax pitch a no-hitter against the Giants, which, in, you know, the rivalry was has always been fierce. It was extremely intense in those times. And, you know, these were the Giants of Mays and McCovey and just a tremendous hitting team. And Koufax was the guy they had to beat, and to get no hit by him was really quite humbling. But, you know, as the years went on, it got far worse.
I remember back as a kid, 1965, when Juan Marichal, there was this bad blood between the Giants and Dodgers, and Marichal ended up in a fight with Johnny Roseboro, the catcher of the Dodgers, and hitting him over the head with his bat. And, you know, brutal, just horrifying to see. To this day, I always felt that incident ended up costing the Giants a trip to the World Series.
The Giants played against the Oakland A's in the 1989 World Series.
And then the earthquake happened.
And the earthquake sort of threw things off kilter, and it was a disastrous World Series for the Giants.
And so there's this whole sequence of negative events. So, I mean, every time the Giants ever got to the postseason, it always ended badly. So that's just a few of them. There's more.
Just year after year, it was, you know, stuck in second place and finding a way not to to succeed in the end. Because, I mean, golly, look at the Giants over the last 53 years here in San Francisco. Hall of Fame players all over the place.
Willie Mays, all by himself, would make you a fan.
Mays, McCovey, Cepeda, Juan Marichal, Gaylord Perry, all these great players and good teams. The lists go on and on. Barry's dad, Bobby Bonds.
There's Bobby Bonds. Wow. He came along, hit a grand slam in his first game as a big leaguer when I was in high school. And he can hit home runs. He can steal bases. He's a gold glove outfit. Wow.
Jeffrey Leonard, Chili Davis.
Will Clark, Jeffrey Leonard, Jack Clark.
The Ripper, Jack the Ripper.
Matt Williams and Will Clark.
Will Clark was definitely always my favorite player growing up. The game face, the whole thing.
Barry Bonds, at that time, there was nobody more exciting or more dramatic than Barry Bonds. And he was doing things that nobody in the history of the game had ever done. And
they didn't ever win. How do you not have at least one championship with as many good teams as we had in San Francisco?
Always being good, but never being quite good enough.
It was almost as though we were just had a bad omen, bad mojo wasn't going to happen.
And now there's almost like there's a dark cloud that hangs over it all.
Now I have a foreign-born wife who has taken to following the Giants because of my enthusiasm. And it was a deep fear of mine that the team would falter on the moment of triumph. And I would introduce another person into the darkness of what it is to be a Giants fan.
Last of the eighth inning, six outs away from their first world championship as the San Francisco Giants. Lincecum back to work, leading 3-1.
Well, Lincecum's up. He's pitching. It's the eighth inning. They need six more outs, and then they win the world championship. My name is Paul. I'm from San Francisco. I'm from here. Paul Schroeder. I remember I was out here in 2002, and a scene just like this. It was right by the Metreon here in the city. It was a crowd like this. We were watching the big screen, and they were six outs away, and they lost it all. And it's sort of a very hurtful moment for everyone here. But, everyone's looking for redemption. We all need that moment. We all need that moment. I should probably stop talking. I'm on the verge of tears. Yeah, it's a big deal. Huge.
It was only nerve-wracking because it was baseball and you have to get those last three outs.
Nerve-wracking.
And Dwayne Kuiper comes on our little roundtable discussion on the radio after the game.
Former San Francisco pitcher Dwayne Kuiper, who broadcasts Giants games with John Miller.
I came up with a new slogan for the Giants. Giants baseball. It's torture.
It's constant torture.
I thought the Rangers were going to score a couple runs, but I didn't think they were going to blow it, really.
My memory is that you had to walk out of the room, in fact, outside onto the fire escape, because you were so nervous that they were going to blow it. You couldn't watch the game.
I don't really remember that.
And I think that kind of the Giants, the powers that be, as time went on, because this kept being repeated as there were more and more games like that, and the Giants were a little uptight about it from a marketing standpoint. I think the marketing people were, it's not torture, it's dramatic. What are you talking about, torture?
There's so many heart attacks throughout the year.
And the fans sort of had this wry comment that they all were making about the Giants, that it's torture and we love it. Torture is fun, and so on and so forth. So the fans took that themselves and turned it into a positive, which when you go to Game 5 in the World Series, and the whole World Series in general, I think, how did that happen? Where did this Giants team come from? All of a sudden, a Giants team had emerged that was methodical, it was smooth, it did everything right. Where was the torture? The torture didn't exist. The Giants were just good, and they were clearly the best team on the field in the League Championship Series and in the World Series. And it was like the Giants had graduated to something more than and something better than we'd seen all year long by the end. Top of the ninth inning, and the Giants still maintaining a 3-1 lead over the Rangers.
So what made this San Francisco Giants team different from those others that got so close but couldn't finish? A story that columnist Bruce Jenkins shares from the season provides some insight.
Well, one night I went back to Chicago for a big series in September, and they lost the game. You know, every loss in September is a bad loss, and every loss that's ever gone down brings the same reaction in the clubhouse. It's very, very quiet. It's morgue-like. There's no music. There's no laughter. It's just you. That's not only the way they feel, but that's the way you sort of have to act. And we're going around getting horrible quotes from one player or another, and all of a sudden, here comes Aubrey Huff walking through the middle of the pack, and there's women in there, and you know, women reporters and everything, wearing only that red thong that he became famous for. And he's got a bandage on his right leg, and he's got tattoos on his arms, and it was just hysterical. And Brian, I was interviewing Brian Wilson at the time, and he goes, "There goes our clubhouse atmosphere. It just walked by. There it goes. Did you see it?" And you know, a great line, and it was just, you know, there's always that sense of levity around the team. There's always somebody there to pick them up when they're down. But yeah, it was an extremely genuine family feeling to that team, which is very rare in sports.
Last of the ninth inning. Three outs away from a World Series championship, and Brian Wilson to come in and try and save this one for Tim Lincecum.
I don't know where he comes from. He comes from a different place. When I first started watching him, he's got the shirt unbuttoned and the mohawk. I didn't even want to talk to this guy. You know, shape up, you know, button the shirt, the haircut's kind of lame. And then you start listening to him night after night, and he's like a beacon of intelligence and perspective in the clubhouse. He's absolutely a guy you go to, win or lose, to hear, you know, his view on the thing, and like I say, put it in perspective. He's borderline genius, really. He can do the New York Times crossword puzzle in like 10 minutes. You can't beat him in chess. He's really a fascinating guy.
Brian Wilson's first batter is American League Most Valuable Player Josh Hamilton. Hannibal Diaz is watching the game in Oakland.
I think he's focused. He knows that he's three outs away from a title. And this is his job. This is what they pay him for, to do this.
My name is Doug Olson. I'm from Oakland, about a block and a half away from here. We're at Ben and Nick's on College. My favorite Giant? Well, considering how the last time I shaved was in 1975, I like Brian Wilson, fear the beard.
Wilson strikes Hamilton out looking.
And Wilson came in the ninth. It was fun.
Former MVP Vladimir Guerrero steps in. He grounds out to short. Two outs. Nelson Cruz comes up to bat. He hit a home run in the seventh inning. It's a battle.
Well, whenever I watch Brian Wilson, He does a full count just to make things look a bit more exciting.
I was feeling calm because I feel like when the game's in Brian Wilson's hands, he's going to make it exciting. He's going to push it to the edge.
I was like, he's not going to blow it. There's no way he can.
I really hope he doesn't blow it.
Full count.
I was like, oh, he's going to strike that guy out.
Here's the pitch.
Strike three. Game over.
Just amazing. It was a Brian Wilson strikeout. A perfect close.
The Giants, for the first time in 56 years and their first time ever as the San Francisco Giants, are the champions of the baseball world.
That was like my 25th World Series for the Chronicle. And the more of those things you watch, you try to watch as many of the things that are going on as you can. I just remember the thing that really struck me was sort of that three-way hug between among the infielders, you know, Sanchez, Uribe, and Renteria. That was beautiful. I mean, they just sort of naturally gravitated toward each other. And I remember Huff's glove 20 feet in the air. And there's so many things. You know, the look on Lincecum's face is that when they had him up on their shoulders. And
Buster Posey ran out from behind home plate and ran and jumped into Brian Wilson's arms, and they embraced, and I think a lot of people in the bar around me followed suit. There was lots of hugging and shrieking and screaming and lots of, I can't believe it.
When the Giants won, I heard such a loud noise, like, woo-hoo-hoo!
The Giants at long last have brought a World Series championship to San Francisco. And let the celebration begin.
Yeah, baby! It's amazing! It's amazing!
I just want to stand down here and just soak this up for, you know, until dawn.
Oh, it was crazy. It was madness. Everybody was popping bottles of champagne.
And here it was, and I was trying to drink in every moment of it.
People were throwing beer around, like if we just won, like if we were the actual players.
We popped a bottle of champagne. And sat there, and you know, if anybody has ever watched any sort of sports thing, that your team wins, you end up, if you're not outside honking your horn and driving around the streets.
Oh, the honking started immediately.
You're watching the highlights for like an hour after the game, and you replay the home run.
2-0 the count, Lee pitches. Edgar Renteria hits a high drive into left center field. David Murphy at the warning track. Count 2-0. Cliff Lee pitches. High fly ball. Deep into center field. Murphy's going back. He's at the warning track.
At the warning track.
On the wall. It's gone.
He's at the wall. And it is
gone.
Edgar Renteria has hit a 3-run homer, which might lead to a Giants World Series victory.
But it was like that, just to, you know, you need that reassurance that it actually did happen. So you have to watch it again several times.
We all sort of went outside and started jumping up and down on the street, on the sidewalk, and high-fived cars passing by. I didn't know how many people in the city owned Giants flags, but there they were driving around the city, waving their flags out the car. You know, and I've never high-fived so many people in my life.
The Giants World Series win brought people from all over the Bay Area together. And as the celebration continued, memories that would last a lifetime began to unfold in real time.
My name is Chris Rothiger. I'm from Berkeley, California, born and raised.
Chris Rothiger manages a pizza place in Emeryville.
I always love the Giants. They've always been underdogs, and I'm so glad it actually happened this year. This is amazing. Absolutely amazing.
It's also amazing how much this Giants fan looks like a certain starting pitcher.
I mean, a little bit, just because people... I walk down the streets and everyone's just like, oh my God, Tim Lincecum, yes!
This night would prove to be not only one of Tim Lincecum's favorites, but also one of Chris Rothiger's.
San Francisco!
Great pitching, man, great pitching.
Yeah, dude, great pitching! Number one hungover city tomorrow!
Well, I'm not. I mean, I don't want to treat it like...
Oh my God, they totally treat you like you were him.
Number one, Timmy.
Giants! Woo! I mean, I don't want to like say that I am him. I'm not him.
No, you're not. Obviously not, but it's...
Like it. That's all it is.
Timmy! Yeah! Giants! Woo! Timmy!
It's entertainment. It's hilarious. And everyone's.
Can I get a photo with you?
Yes, you have.
San Francisco's Dana Cohen had an equally memorable, if a bit more painful, experience the night the Giants won the World Series. She was partying in the city's Mission District.
People are lighting off fireworks, and all of a sudden someone has grabbed a mattress which had been laying against a wall, sort of abandoned, and starts to light that on fire. 5 minutes later, a fire truck pulls up and puts it out.
But that only added to the revelry.
At least 50 people jump on top of the fire truck, climb up, jump on, and are dancing and cheering, and everyone below them is cheering. And somehow I found myself to be one of those people on top of the fire truck.
With thousands and thousands of like-minded fans.
So then a phalanx of motorcycle cops pulls up on either side of the fire truck, and everyone on top sort of panics and realizes, okay, it's time to get down. And somehow I just landed wrong on my heel, and turns out I broke my heel disembarking the fire truck.
So the memory carried on.
And I knew I wanted to decorate the cast. The doctor told me I was going to be in a cast for 6 weeks, and I knew I had to decorate it in some way, and it seemed only appropriate that it would be Giants related. So I had a friend draw on it, and she drew an enormous portrait of Tim Lincecum on the side of my cast. And hence it became Tim Lincecast.
For others, San Francisco's World Series season was literally life-changing. Like for singer-songwriter Ashcon Dameron, who repurposed the well-loved Journey song Don't Stop Believin' as an anthem for the Giants' playoff run.
Just a loyal fan trying to do the best I can.
I mean, the ride from the first day that we dropped the video. I mean, and to have like the Giants continuously winning at the same time, it was just such a complete dream world. It was so crazy. The day we dropped the video, we released the video. It was game 3 of the NL Division Series with the Braves. It was right after that game. And we had wanted initially to have it done before Game 3, but it was having trouble uploading to YouTube. It just kept, there was some glitch. It just kept failing and failing. So then the game starts. That game was like the whole freaking thing right there. So you had Sanchez throwing this 1-0 gem, you know. I remember at one point the video finally had uploaded, and the other guys, they were like ready to drop it. We just got to do it. You know, we were starting to get worried that we'd put in all this work, and who knows, you know, we weren't even going to have any time for anybody to see it. The season's, you know, going to be close to over. Who knows? So anyway, we're clinging on to this 1-0 lead. They're like, should we drop it? I'm like, we can't drop the video now. You know, Sanchez is throwing a no-hitter. Come on. You know, it's be tacky. We got to wait, you know. Can't jinx it, you know, all of that. So we end up holding on. We're holding on. 8th inning, 1-0. And Hensky hits that homer, the 2-run shot off of Romo. And I'm just, I mean, everything sunk. Everything sunk. It was, here we go again. What did I do to deserve this? Why? I guess this is just how it is. I guess this is going to be my life as a sports fan, as a life, as an individual. You know, I don't know what I've done, but maybe there's some lesson behind this. You know, it was all that all over again. So much pain. And then the 9th. Down to 2 outs, and I run downstairs and I grab my rally thong from the video. I'm like, come on, Aubrey, let's go. Man, sure enough, he fists that thing to right field. And then Posey hits the ball through Conrad's legs. And the rest is history. And then so we win that game. And immediately after that game, I press click. Giants 2010 playoff anthem, Don't Stop Believing.
Oh,
all these tremendously heartfelt, emotional stories about what the Giants meant to them. I can't think of too many sports stories. And again, I've experienced these in all these towns and all these great things that happened to other people. And when it happened here, I tell you, we didn't get cheated. We had it as good as it gets. That when people are just so moved by that, and even if they didn't care about the team necessarily in their lives day to day, all of a sudden they did. Literally, families were drawn together by the spectacle. They're watching it all together. You know, the little kids, mom and dad, the grandparents.
What I decided this year is that this is who I am, and I'm not going to try and be different.
I couldn't believe it.
They actually did the whole damn thing. It's unreal.
It finally happened. Oh, she's getting choked up to think about it. By the bay, I
left my heart. Just to bring that type of attention to the Bay Area makes, you know, the energy go up a couple of notches. You know what I mean? Like, all across the board, from just going out the nightlife, you know what I'm saying, to just people on the streets in the daytime, everybody's a lot more friendly. You know, they feel a little bit more proud, you know what I'm saying, to say that they live and they're from San Francisco at this time, you know what I mean? So
if you were in the city or in during the postseason, you know the spirit and the energy and the fervor with which people celebrated this team. So I think when a lot of people hear that I was on top of a fire truck celebrating, they understand.
Everybody embraced this story, and I think that story brought in more sort of non-baseball fans or casual in-and-out fans became riveted to this story because it was just so cool. It was like watching your kid's little league team, you know? I mean, you were really, there was an emotional involvement in this team that was really unsurpassed.
And in San Francisco, I consider anybody and everybody who was there damn near like my family. If you was rooting for the Giants at that time, we all kind of felt like family.
I have friends who were Dodgers fans who are just absolutely, they hate the Giants as much as I dislike their team. And they were congratulating, and that was good. That was good baseball.
The 1993 team that got eliminated on the last day, the 2002 team that lost in the World Series, they were so revolving around Bonds, particularly in 2002, that it was a more difficult team to embrace, a more difficult icon to embrace.
But I'm much happier that this team won, because this was like a real team and not just a superstar and a bunch of role players. This was a team effort all the way. You don't find this a lot in baseball.
And the great thing about that is that it was absolutely true. I mean, I've been in clubhouses since 1972, and this was easily one of the best clubhouses I've ever had the pleasure of working.
The thing about this whole postseason also that impressed me is that everything went the Giants' way. All the bad calls did not go against the Giants. The bad mistakes didn't hurt the Giants. The weather was great. Everything went right. It was just, it had to happen. It was just destined to happen.
It was a relief that I no longer have to follow the games as if it was a matter of life and death, and I can just enjoy them for whatever they are, and I don't have to worry about all the failure adding up and adding up and adding up, and I can just enjoy the games now on. And it'll still mean a lot, but it'll be healthier, I think. That's what the World Series meant to me.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And to tell you the truth, I don't care if they never win another baseball game as long as I live. Because we've got this one. We got a championship, and that's all anybody ever asked for.
The world champion, San Francisco Giants.
All the people who aren't around anymore. You know, friends from school. I'm not old. Friends from school who aren't around anymore. My parents, my grandparents. I wish they were here to see this, because they would have. It would have been fun. From across the bay to across the world, the San Francisco Giants are number one. There was not just, there were so many people, and so many people in a mood to celebrate. Everybody say, the Giants are
rocking in the USA. I went to the parade on crutches in a splint. and got in the front row and was very pleased.
The cheering was so loud, like it was a constant ovation from these hundreds of thousands of fans lining the streets from Montgomery Street onto Market Street and down Market Street for, I guess it was a mile and a half before we got to City Hall.
I mean, I thought I'd heard cheering at the ballpark, but when you get that crowd at Civic Center, that was incredible. I've never heard anything like it. Just that roar. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people were there, but it was incredible. Sing out loud, singing, hey,
everybody. A million people all with the same look on their face.
Nothing was as unfamiliar and out of this world and beyond me than that World Series parade. You know, when I found out that they had a spot for me in the parade, I was so excited. And I mean, can you imagine that from a fan's perspective? You know, Freddie Sanchez, hey man, I love the song, and Ross was such a nice guy, and Tim was so cool. He was so cool.
For me, what was great was sort of in the larger picture, the Giants were a means to bring everyone together in sort of shared purpose, which was to root the Giants along, but also to sort of savor the success that they were having. And this was not just fathers and their children. And you know, we parents and our children, how many things do we have in common? You know, sometimes it's just a ball club that we can talk about and share. So it was a great day in the community. And I think it wasn't just the city of San Francisco. I think it was the whole Bay Area that shared in the joy and the experience. So in that regard, the Giants and baseball sort of transcended their standing as a game that has a season and to becoming a great moment in the history of the community.
Okay, take a deep breath. It's over. The 2010 season, that is. As for the celebrating, well, it's mostly over. At least the dancing on fire engines is. However, the memory you have of the Giants winning it all. Maybe it's Brian Wilson getting that final out, Edgar Renteria's home run, or hugging that total stranger at 16th and Guerrero when you'd realize we'd finally won it. Whatever moment it is for you that captures it all, well, that'll be around for a while. Whether you're a homegrown fan, a recent convert to the black and orange, or you just came along for the parade, it doesn't matter. In 2010, we are all Giants. We're All Giants is an original production of KALW News. The team includes Audrey Dilling, Greg Georgiou, Chris Hoff, Tess Kenner, Max Jacobs, Casey Miner, Erica Mu, Rena Palta, Brian Pelletier, Seth Samuel, and Ali Winston. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. You can hear this documentary again at our digital news magazine, KALW.org. That's also where you can find web-exclusive content related to We're All Giants, including stories from Ash Khan, Da Vinci, Joe Burke, Chris Daly, Joe Eskenazi, Alan Farley, Max Jacobs, Bruce Jenkins, and John Miller. Thanks for tuning in. For KALW News, I'm Hanat Baba.
2-0 the count. Lee pitches. Edgar Renteria hits a high drive into left center field. Murphy's going back. He's at the warning track. He's at the wall and it is gone! Yeah!